You are now listening to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast.
Five, six, seven, eight. Holla, boys and girls, it's the BGN. Coming from the Marvel world to the DC friends. All the way from Hollywood to the PCN. She defends everyone from sleazy men. Won't apologize for spitting Shonda Rhimes. The space that we make is never colonized. Talking games and movies and actors.
Word? Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. My name is Jamie and I am your host. I am so grateful to bring to you this legendary guest, Oscar-nominated actor Margaret Avery. You know her best from the spellbinding role of Shug Avery in Steven Spielberg's 1985 classic, The Color Purple. Well, she has a new series on Netflix that premiered on November 21st called Man on the Inside, and she plays the role of Florence. She is a spirited, poetry-loving resident in this retirement community that's anything but typical. Avery's portrayal highlights her enduring talent, blending humor and depth. And the role not only reaffirms her versatility, but it positions her as a powerful presence in comedy. We are so excited to speak with her. I really got a lot of incredible gems of information from her. This conversation is more than just her work as an actor on not only this Netflix series, not only on her work in The Color Purple, but really just a foundational conversation around relationships and moving forward to new perspectives in 2025. As we kick off our first episode for the new year, marinate on this episode. Allow it to kind of be your mantra for the new year, because Margaret Avery, a woman who really is filled with so much wisdom, really sheds a lot of light on how you should see yourself when it comes to self-love, self-reflection, and just how you should navigate the world. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast, and Happy New Year. Well, thank you so much, Ms. Avery, for taking the time to speak to Black Girl Nerds. I really appreciate you coming on our platform to talk to us. I absolutely loved this series. I binged it in one sitting. I watched it with my mom. It was just such a delight to watch, and it was certainly a delight to watch you in it. And you play the role of Florence on the Netflix series Man on the Inside. And she is such a fascinating character. How would you describe her, and what makes her unique in this series?
Thank you for having me, Jamie. This is a pleasure for me to start the new year out just talking positively, and particularly about this project, which I'm really proud of, starring Ted Danson. We were all seniors, the cast, but it's a cast. The subject matter is something that everybody of any generation can relate to. You've got somebody in the family that's probably like one of these characters. But your question being, what makes my character unique? I think the writing. My character is interested in poetry. Florence, my character, lost her husband, and she found peace through poetry. And you don't hear that a lot. What I did want the producer, writers to change was the artist, the poet that I was enamored with. I wanted them to say Maya Angelou or somebody that people of color would relate to. But that's even unique, that a woman of color, because of her poetry, love for poetry, it didn't matter what ethnicity the poet was from. The uniqueness about the character, I think for the writing, the fact that you don't see these characters written about very much. So all the characters were unique in that sense because we're all in that, the golden years of our lives. And when do you ever see anything like that on television? It's always young people, because our writers, most of them are young, so they write about what they know. And it's usually young people's scenarios.
And I would even add to the fact that she's sort of the glue that holds all of these characters together. She's the one character that everybody seems to get along with. And she's so endearing and so loving and kind. And everybody has their own sort of, they're a little bit rough around the edges, but Florence has just this very sweetness, this sweetness to her that allows everyone to be able to kind of coalesce and bring everybody together. And you don't see that a lot in these kind of ensemble pieces. So that's what made her unique to me when I was watching this as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you for describing Margaret Avery.
And you really brought that to this role. And that's why I was so excited to see you in this. And you know, you play Florence, you're part of this larger ensemble cast. And how did you build chemistry with your co-stars? And were there any memorable moments for you while you were filming this?
Well, one of the things that we all enjoyed was that we weren't the oldest one on the set. And we had a lot of stories, personal stories, off camera that we shared with each other, because we all started our careers back in the 70s. And so it was nice to be able to sit back and laugh about the good old days, in the struggles of the good old days, and all just funny stories of people that we've worked with. And some of them, bless their hearts, have passed on, but that we remember them for the gifts of laughter that they gave us.
Again, this character really resonated with me, and I really enjoyed seeing your performance. If Florence were to give any advice to you, Margaret Avery, what would she say?
I would ask anyone, what is the one thing they can never take back? What is the one thing you can never take back or get back? Think about that and your audience. If you lost your health, you could probably get some of it back or all of it back with diet, exercise, medication, surgery, something like that. Mm-hmm. So you can't say health. I mean, what would you say? What's the one thing you can never get back? You can't say money, because, I mean, unless you lose all your savings and everything when you're in your 90s, maybe you won't be able to regain the money. But usually if you work hard enough, save, maybe you can get part of it back or most of it back. So what would you guess?
I mean, I'm thinking of like a lost loved one. That's something that you can't get back.
You're right, that relationship.
Yeah.
But you might be able to put that love into someone else or carry that love in your heart. My answer is, and I don't know about your listeners, my answer is time. Once it's gone, you never get it back. But so you want to make sure that in your youth or even today, no matter how old you are, to value your time. Because if you're young, We take it for granted, but those are our building years, like a foundation of our careers or of relationships. And it's foundation on a house. If it's shaky, the house is going to be shaky. So I say make careful choices and make use of that time. A lot of times we women, I think we fall in love with being in love, and we put a lot of energy into relationships that are never going to work out. But we don't look at the red flags. And I always say to people, if you want to get married to someone or you just want to live together because you feel they're your soulmate, get some pre-counseling, because you don't know that other person's values. You assume you do, but maybe you don't. For example, if you're a woman that's got to have a $500 name brand purse, and your partner is very frugal and does not like that, but your feeling is, hey, I work for this and I'm the one paying for it, so what's it to you? But you will find yourself arguing over how you spend money. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
we got to remember that we cannot change another person. You
Facts.
you we can only change ourselves.
Yeah.
Or
And you'll bang your
and
head against the wall doing that.
hopefully your reaction to a situation will change. That other person may be motivated to change, but we can't waste our time in relationships that will go nowhere, or at least not in the direction that you want. And if you are hooking up with somebody who's cheating on their wife, and they're saying, "Oh, I'm going to get divorced, and we're separated." Well, you hook up with this person, and years later you find out they're cheating on you. Well,
Don't be
don't think
surprised.
that they changed.
Yeah.
I have a girlfriend. She was involved with this married man for years, and then when she was so upset when he started cheating on her, and I thought, well, where is your common sense?
Yeah.
But I
You
could go
deserve
on.
better than that. Why be the second wheel to a relationship, why be the person that you're only seen as the side piece, the person
Right,
that you're seeing
right.
on the weekends? He
Are
doesn't
they?
value your time.
Jamie, do they still use the term? Because I'm not around young people much. I'm only around my age group. But do they still use the term booty call and
Oh
hoochie
yeah, they
mama?
do. The
Oh,
booty
okay.
call, yes.
And the hoochie mama. So I mean, it's like today fashion is really tight pants and tight tops and showing the cleavage. But I think that you might attract the wrong type of guy or woman or whatever, whichever way you go. We have to think about those things. And I remember, since we're talking about relationships right now, I remember hearing someone say years ago, someone will tell you when you meet someone for the first time, if you really listen, they're going to tell you what they're about within 10 minutes, maybe even 5 minutes of that conversation. But if you're so anxious to have a relationship with someone, just to say you got a man or you got your woman, whatever, you're not going to hear those red flags. So I
Exactly.
always say, this is grandma talking. I was always choosing the wrong type of guy. And it wasn't until I got counseling that, in other words, me getting healthy, was I able to really choose a guy that was healthy for me.
So, and that's the key, right? You have to take care of you before you start investing yourself in another person. You have to make sure you're wholesome and you're fully, and that you fully love you before you can love someone else. That's, I've always felt that way.
And like yourself. I was going to say that even if you're not in a relationship, it's good to get some therapy. I know myself, I grew up in poverty. I grew up in an alcoholic home. And we don't realize that as children, I know myself, what I learned in therapy was that I carried mannerisms or things that protected me as a child. I carried them into adulthood, which did not work. And to discover what those things were for me just changed my entire life, because I was choosing the same kind of guy, not realizing it. Have you ever noticed that somebody, you know, they say, oh my God, this is my second marriage. Well, they probably married the same type person, not recognizing it.
Yeah, those toxic patterns of behavior, because sometimes it goes back to something in themselves that they haven't dealt with internally. Mm-hmm. And then that goes back to your advice about therapy. It's like, get the therapy, talk to someone, talk it out, get that out of your system, deal with those issues, so that way you can move forward and move past that and find someone that's, you know, that's valuable, that's worthy for you.
But the thing of it is, Jamie, a lot of times that you don't recognize these things in yourself. It comes out.
That's true.
It comes out with good therapy, because with me, growing up in poverty, we never really exchanged gifts at Christmas time because we couldn't afford it. If we had a tree and a nice dinner, that was it. And even today, I'm not into giving presents so much. I'm into just having family and friends over. But the other part of it is what I found out in therapy. It was because of poverty, I never learned to ask for anything because I knew we couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. But that never asking for myself went into my adulthood. So in a relationship, I never really ask for what I needed for me. I just got involved with being there for my partner. Does that make sense?
Wow. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I think a lot of women do that, period, in relationships. I think that women like to look, they like to invest more of, they like to see, they like to serve what the man's needs, or, you know, their partner's needs, more than their own needs. And I think that's more of a woman thing.
And you find out that you wind up being unhappy, unfulfilled.
Yeah.
And it probably comes out, it may come out without you even knowing it, being resentful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And being passive aggressive, you know, going along with something, but then angry about it. And that's so unhealthy.
It's very unhealthy. And again, it goes back to therapy. You've got to work on you before you invest in being in a relationship with someone else.
I just worked a show. I won't name it now because I'm talking about it. But one of the lead actresses, and this wasn't the inside man, one of the lead actresses said to me that she and her husband were like high school sweethearts. They even grew up together practically. And once they got married, everything was great. But then when the babies started coming, somehow the relationship changed. So they started going to therapy at that time in their marriage. And even after the children, with the children still, they continue once a week. They go to therapy. And I thought, well, God, that's great, because the two of them talk out their situation in in a safe environment, and it's a non-judgmental environment, and they're constantly learning how to voice their needs to each other in a healthy way. So I thought it was great, and I'm so happy that people of color, and I'm thinking, I guess, specifically of Blacks, we're into therapy now. It's not like a taboo thing. It's wonderful.
Yeah. There's a great network called Therapy for Black Girls. They actually have a podcast as well. And I love the fact that there's these communities that are even specifically catered for specific groups of, you know, for Black women. And of course, there's a celebration of Black Mental Health Month for men. And I just love the fact that there's communities that are celebrating mental health awareness for people of color, and Black people specifically, because, you know, it used to be a stigma that we didn't go to therapy, and that needs to be normalized, that yes, we need therapy too. I think we need therapy more than most nationalities. I want to shift gears really quick to
prone more to really enjoy therapy and know the value of it, because I am a licensed psychologist that most people don't know. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Oh, and I did not know that about you. That is very intriguing. Okay, that's good to know. And I love this conversation that we're having around this, because I think, you know, as we're embarking on this new year, people want to listen about, you know, how can I change my mindset? What are the new, you know, strategies and the new ways I can implement my life and my relationships and stuff? This is a good start to our conversation with what we just had about relationships and stuff.
Well, I just want, can I share, I got a new calendar, a 25, a planning calendar. And I just want to read you what it says. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It says, let me get in the light here. They say, the day designer, we believe that everyone can design and live a life that they love. And our mission is to help you to do just that. Day designer products combine beautiful designs, helpful content, and easy to use planning pages that inspire and guide users to find balance, focus, and productivity. And so I looked at what they have for January to really start. It talks about how to design your days and how to look at the big picture. What is it that you want? And each day, set your goals and design your day. And stay on course, it's talking about. So there's, I know that I am super busy. You know how hard it is to balance work and family and all the responsibilities of career and the responsibilities of being the woman of the household, or even if you don't have family, there's the other things. So
yeah.
That's always been a challenge for me. So I'm going to use this little daily book to help make me stay focused. Because as I found that as I've gotten older, I don't multitask as easily. And you know, all of you out there who are mothers and wives, and you know it's so hard to just do one thing. You've got to be able to do dinner and plan this, make sure you've got the groceries together. I had the PTA meetings, I had the career to memorize lines. It was just, I did it all. But now it's much more difficult, and I need this guidance. So I just hope that people, back to this thing of valuable time, make use of what you have to do for yourself, and use this time, put something away some time away each day that you're doing something for yourself while you're doing all these other things. And I think if we plan our days and set a goal, and it's easier to say than do, but that's what I'm going to try to do this new year.
Make time valuable. That should be your mantra for 2025, because time, as we said before, it's not something that you can get back. The most of your time. And something that is timeless is your performance as Shug Avery in The Color Purple.
That character put me on the map.
It really did. It's one of those characters that have resonated with all of us throughout the years, throughout the decades, truly. And I wanted to know, what are your thoughts on the new adaptation that just came out a couple of years ago? And how do you feel it reimagines the story for today's audiences?
Well, the latest production of it was a film version of the play. And I think that's what some people didn't understand when they compared the original film, Color Purple, with the musical film. And I saw all three versions, all three casts, rather, on Broadway. The music was different, but the same here. When you saw the musical film, it was the same music as the stage version. And the writing was pretty much the same. So when I hear people say that they were disappointed in the musical, it's because they were comparing it to the film. And I wish that the marketing of the film could have made that clearer, that it wasn't a remake of the film. It was a remake of the play in the setting of a film. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I remember just watching the trailer for it, and I was like, where's the musical numbers?
is that right? Oh, they should have.
Yeah, you didn't even see the music shown in the trailer.
Well, maybe that's why people got confused.
Yeah.
That's probably it. Maybe that was it. But I thought, back to my feelings of the musical, at the film, I thought they did a fabulous job. And I'm so proud of Taraji, because she got to do her own singing, too. That was her singing.
She was really good, yeah.
With me, it was Tata Vega. I lip-synced, too. People still think I did the singing, but it was a bombshell, 5-foot Puerto Rican named Tata Vega that just kicked her behind. I sing, but I'm more of a pop jazz singer. And I could never have done God's Trying to Tell You Something. That's strictly gospel. And she tore it up. She made that scene. But people don't know that she did the singing, because Black people don't stay and read the credits. They start getting up as soon as the credits leave.
And they didn't have post-credit scenes back then.
Lord. But anyway, I thought the whole thing, everybody just did a bang-up job. And I loved everyone.
Looking back, how did your role as Shug Avery impact your career as well as your personal life?
I'm thinking now, my mind is going faster than my voice. You know, when we were shooting Color Purple, we knew that it was something special, because the last Black film was 8 years prior, with the lovely late Cicely Tyson and late Paul Winfield, the movie called Sounder. Remember that? And if you know that film, it leaves you really all up because the positivity of this family, the love. And so when Color Purple came around, there was a lot of protests because of the image of the Black man. And I understand that. I understand it now, because we didn't have anything else projecting the positivity of Black men. And the film is so powerful. And I learned that when I toured, did the PR for it in Europe, right? And people who never had relationships with people of color, you go away thinking that's how we are. I mean, I even do that with certain films. I think that Italians are affiliated with the mafia and all of that. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, Margaret. You're doing the same thing to them as others may do to me. Are you following me?
Yeah.
So it was a complicated thing because Alice Walker wrote the book first. And it was, the film was, it was as much of a duplication of the book as it could possibly. The only thing that the film was different was the relationship, that gay relationship between the character Celie and my character Suge. Okay. And the reason that part of the film was not in depth, our relationship was not in depth, is because Steven Spielberg, our director, wanted it to be a more of a commercialized film, one that would make money if it could. He said he did, wasn't sure he could make it make money. But he didn't want it to get stuck in the artsy theaters. Okay. Now we're talking about nearly 40 years ago.
Right.
So that probably wouldn't happen today. As a matter of fact, they probably show us in bed together. Who knows the way things have materialized now. So the gays who had read the book, they were upset about it because that part of the relationship wasn't shown. Mm-hmm. So Black people were upset. So we got NAACP picketing us. Mm-hmm. This, I'm sure you how complicated this was. NAACP picketed us, and then they LA NAACP turned around and gave awards for it. Now, you see how complicated it is?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any kind of sense. It's crazy. And then, I don't know what happened, that Steven Spielberg, people were upset with him. You know, Quincy Jones was the one who took the script around and tried every studio. They turned it down. And Steven Spielberg was the only one who had the power to green light it. And he was the only one that said, okay, I'll do it. So people were upset that they didn't have a Black director. Well, if Steven hadn't agreed to do it, it wouldn't have been done at all.
It wouldn't have seen the light of day. Wow.
Now, yeah. And that was 40 years ago. We didn't have Spike Lee's and John Singleton and Ava DuVernay and all these people.
No.
You see what I mean? Which gets me a little bit on social media today. People don't know what the frick they're talking about. They jump in and make these comments not knowing anything about what they're talking about. And social media has revealed how ignorant so many people are.
It really has. It's a toxic place.
I mean, it's crazy. Something happens, they don't know anything about it other than what somebody said about it, and then they start up. Mm-hmm. Don't let grandma get started here. But anyway, back to Color Purple. How did it change my life? Well, you would think that being nominated for Best Supporting Actor, that my career would have shot up. But baby, I didn't work for 2 years after Color Purple. Couldn't get arrested. And why? Because there were no other projects to put me in. I couldn't even get a manager. I went around, they said, well, what can I do with you? You see, the Black actors, the male actor, such as Danny Glover, he could work beside the white film leading white male as his sidekick. He didn't have to be connected to marrying anybody or being anybody's boyfriend or a family situation. Whereas Black women, I had to be, if they didn't have me, somebody's wife or girlfriend, where am I going to go? The white actors didn't want Black women as their lover or girlfriend or wife. You see?
Right.
So if it hadn't been for the college lecture circuit, I really would have been in financial trouble. I remember reading the description of a character. It was in the Variety. The Variety is a Hollywood type newspaper that lets everybody know what's happening in the industry.
Yeah.
And it said, we want a Margaret Avery type. And I thought, well, hell, hire me. A Margaret Avery type. And I can't buy a job.
That's hilarious. Wow.
I mean, it's crazy. So I had to go back to doing television and was glad to do it because at least I was still working in my craft. But I got the backlash for television because they figured, whoa, well, you've done, you worked with Steven Spielberg. So, you know, we don't, you're used to getting 17 takes. Well, they didn't know or understand that I started out in television prior to stage. I was used to the pace of television. Mm-hmm. In film, with The Color Purple, we only shot 3 pages a day. In television and in some of these independent films, you're shooting 10 pages a day. There's a big difference. So because of my background working in stage and going into blaxploitation films, where you had to do it, we did it in one take and prayed we could do it again, prayed there was some kind of a sound problem or something so that we could do a second take. It's hard to do it perfect in one take.
Right.
Because, not because you don't know lines. We knew our lines, but you got to like kind of get into it. So that's, you know, with my career, at least people remember Color Purple. And because of Color Purple, I did start working again, but never getting the pay that many of us get now and still have to fight for our for our money, because there is a subtlety, there's a business aspect of it, of wanting to get the best you can for the least amount of money. That's just good business. I mean, we even buy clothes that way and furniture. We want to get the best price we can get, but at some point, to offer somebody who is so has prove themselves over and over, and to offer them a much lesser price than you would have the white girl, okay? There's a point of being, I feel, disrespected. And so when Taraji says, anything about the money. I understand that. And you get tired of fighting for the money. You get tired.
Yeah. And it's sad that you were dealing with that back then, nearly 40 years ago, and she's still dealing with that now, just a couple of years ago with the new reimagined version. And this is a good segue to my next question about still having to fight this fight, because you mentioned before you were nominated for Best Supporting Actress for The Color Purple, and the Oscars are coming up. And although the nominees haven't been officially announced just yet, there are some Black actresses that are being mentioned and being considered. Do you think that the Oscars for Black actresses have gotten better over the years since you were nominated? Or is there still a lack of representation when it comes to those awards? Is there still a fight to be had when it comes to being recognized in the Oscars conversation?
I think there's more, certainly more opportunities for the young actor. You look at Netflix and all these different channels. I guess you call them channels, Disney and Peacock and Amazon. I mean, and then a girlfriend of mine who d didn't have Netflix and these things, different choices. She finally got Netflix, and she texted me and said, "Oh my God, look at all this, all these Black people working. I never knew this." And da, da, da. I said, "Yeah, join the new world. You don't have to be a thorough grandma. I mean, just come on." But it is true that there's more opportunities out there to be seen. So I'm hoping that. I let me say this. I think when a Black actress can get an Academy Award and then go from that film to another film and then go from that film to another film, that's the way you build a career. And that's what I've seen white actresses do. They go from one film to another.
Yes.
But one film, and then you don't work for 5, 6 years because you're looking for quality, what you deserve. You've earned the Academy Award. So why do you want to go step down and do something that's l of lesser quality? But the, and that's not always offered for women of color. And once that happens, I'll feel like, oh, okay, the business has changed. Now, what I get upset with the Academy Awards, they talk about all this diversity, and then they have no one up for an award, but then they have all these Black actors out of the past presenting to make it look like, see, we've got diversity. Well, no, you don't have anybody nominated, so forget about this word diversity. All you did was pull out these other people who have won in the past to present to make it look like diversity. But you have to understand business too. It's not it, but I have to I say this too because. Denzel Washington, I remember on an interview, this was years ago when he was hot then, and he was making a lot of pictures, but he said, and Denzel, if you hear me, you know you said this. He said, it's not an even playing ground. And it's true. It's just not even
That's so true.
for men or for women of color.
I would argue and say that Black men, though, have a better advantage than Black women when it comes to Oscars, that more of them get nominated and win compared to Black actresses. There's only, as a matter of fact, in the Black actress category, Halle Berry is the only one that's won.
What did well Al Alfre Winfrey did she won something? Well, and say I have to like look at my history book, but But that's also true for the white men. The white men, if you're not on the A-list, I mean, you're not going from picture to picture either. But the pecking ground, it seems to me, is white male is at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Then white female. Mm-hmm. And maybe black male. And then black female. And that's, and when I say black, I mean all the other ethnicities, Hispanic or Asian, I mean all of them. And women particularly, you're not going to see an older white woman with working that much either. It's like it used to be over 40, well, you were over the hill. Now, it's like I think in your 50s, you're going to slow down. Because the business is for pretty young women. And that's the American film business. But if you look at the European movies, they have older women. They have more respect for older women. Now, it might be fewer of them working. I mean, Judi Dench and some of them, were you saw in everything. Mm-hmm. A handful of them, but we don't. You don't see no handful of American older women,
right?
It's like they
put us out. Ageism is an issue too. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You know, so I'm lucky at my age to still be working, but it's still very competitive because there aren't as many roles for my gender and age and ethnicity. But it's competitive because whoever is still working in my age range, they're veterans. None of us are going to give a bad reading. Mm-hmm. It's about now, do you fit in being somebody's grandmother or mother? Do you fit in with the look or the type? Or maybe, did you work with this director before and he prefers you because he's familiar with you and knows what you can do? So there are a lot of things outside things that decide how you get the role other than your talent. Things that you just don't have any control over. Now, right. Not having control over what you're cast for has always been. But I mean, maybe in your youth, you didn't get the part. You were still pretty enough, and you were talented enough. But, oh, you're up against a person who had a series on that network. And so the network chooses that other person over you. And I've heard casting people say, even though that other person wasn't as good as you, but the network had the power to make the decision, had nothing to do with your talent. So it's a tough business. And I always tell people, don't get in the business to be a star, because you might not work. I mean, there are thousands of people in the union, actors in the union, that do not work. There's only a small percentage that really make a living from acting. And now that the rules have changed about how you can make money or how you can even make enough to qualify for health insurance, it's very hard.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very hard.
There was the recent strike that happened, and you know, I'm glad that you guys were able to negotiate that. But still, I know it's hard out there, and
it's very hard. Very hard. Because yeah, now that the corporations have taken over, and I know that this might be a political statement, I don't care, I've been living it, it's the truth. It's like there's more about making money than looking at the art and respecting the talent. It's who's going to make the most money. Who do we select who's got a lot of followers? I mean, it's a little crazy.
And we're dealing with that on the journalism side and the press side of things. So I definitely can empathize with you on that, with the whole, how many followers do you have? And because now everything is being deferred to social media content, and how do you look as an influencer?
However, how but you have to say too, on the flip side, I mean, look at the people who have gotten wonderful things because of their site. Issa Rae, she had her developed her own style, and it was so popular and so wonderful. She got a series without going through the normal way that studios were used to you doing.
Very
So
true.
that way, it's really great. If you're creative, then you're free to go out there and just soar.
Yes,
So
yeah.
everything has its flip side,
It does. It does. And I want to wrap up our conversation because I really enjoyed chatting with you today. We've talked about all of these really incredible, interesting topics. Going back to Man on the Inside, which is now streaming on Netflix for everyone to check out, how do you hope that this show will connect with audiences? Do you think it's more about the laughs, the characters, or is there something deeper?
Well, I think that the writers, I asked them, I said, you must have lived this. I mean, because I thought that all the characters were so real. And we're dealing with d different issues, relationships, friendships, dementia, death, and in a way that's comical, but also very truthful. And I'm hoping that the aging, our society will respect the elderly more. And
Yes.
I think it's really true that you can judge the tone or the quality or of a nation by the way they treat their elderly and the way they treat the importance of education. And I'm concerned about both those because we have our elder population continues to grow. Isn't that amazing that our wonderful Jimmy Carter made it to 100 and did so many fabulous things after his presidency? So you can't start to, you've got to value the wisdom in age and not discard us. People in my business, I think sometimes people want to cast people that have less experience because they figure they'll be cheaper. But at the same time, that lack of experience costs them money because they don't have the professionalism. They can't take direction as well. So they've got to shoot. They've got to use more film, and time is money in film. So they learn the hard way. I remember doing a commercial years ago, and they decided they would use the stunt guy to replace an actor. And I had to work with that stunt guy. Well, every time they would say action. Well, in his nervousness, he would change the line and he would say, I don't think he'd stay out that long, or something like that. I don't, instead of saying stays, he would say, I don't think he'd stay out that long. And it's because he was so nervous, he would just speak the way he normally speaks. Not good English. Grammar, I should say. And so they had to keep taking that over and over and over again. I said, well, I'm glad you can see how you cheated an actor out of a job, and now this stunt guy is costing you thousands because he can't say stay.
The irony of spending so much money because of one word.
Right, because he was so nervous, he would just forget about the line how he had to say it and say it the way he would say it.
Right. Oh, wow.
And that happens all the time. I've heard of actors, these non-professional actors, personality actors, you might say, come to set not knowing their lines and costing a lot of money. But with
Yeah.
that being said, I know you want to wrap this up. How do we wrap this up with a positive note for 2025? I just want so many good things to happen for people. For me, 24 was challenging, very challenging, and I'm just looking forward
Same.
to it being productive, uplifting, and whatever comes at me negatively wise, it'll just bounce off my back, and I just keep stepping with a chin high and determination to be a bad nerd.
The bad in a good way, bad in a good way. And
Absolutely.
I think a good way to start off 2025 is for folks to tune in and go fire up their Netflix and check out Man on the Inside. Because I, like I said at the top of this interview, I watched it. I binged all the episodes. I absolutely loved it. I watched it with my mom. So it's, if you have, your parents nearby you, feel free to watch with them. If not, either way, it's a beautiful, endearing series. I laughed. There was a moment of tears as well. I went on an emotional roller coaster watching this series, and I absolutely loved you in it. So Ms. Avery, it was an honor. It was a privilege. I just gleaned so much wealth of knowledge from you in this interview, and I appreciate the opportunity to have spoken to you today. Thank you so much for talking to Black
Oh,
Girl Nerds.
thank you for inviting me. I loved it. And just Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Black Girl Nerds podcast is produced by Jamie Broadnax. The opening theme song to our show is written and performed by Samus. Various instrumentals are performed by Samus, Sky Blue, and Shubzilla. You can find various episodes of the Black Girl Nerds podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Google Play Music, and Spotify.